It has been over 7 months since the introduction of consumer duty by the Financial Conduct Authority into the financial services market. This includes a radical shift in the financial services market because regulated firms are required to implement consumer duty principle into their business model. To understand the importance of implementing such a principle into a reality where the focus shifts on consumer outcome, yes, consumer outcome, we need to understand the underlying reason for having such a duty in retail aspects of financial services where debt collection and debt advice fit in. Welcome to Debt Talk Podcast with me as your host, Ripon Ray. You may have guessed it, this time I'm speaking about consumer duty and the debt sector. To help me navigate this subject, I have Kathy Ellison, a senior researcher and consultant from Savanta, a research and advisory firm from London, Bob Winnington, CEO of the Money Advice Liaison Group, which is a membership organization to the debt sector, both in the context of recovery and debt advice. He also worked in the banking and finance sector for over 30 years. And finally, Alex Pitchard, Chief Risk Officer of Step Change, a national advice charity which helps vulnerable communities in financial hardship. My panelists will also provide Debt Talk listeners with top tips to assist us to navigate the subject and those organizations and individuals need support in this area. Let me get Kathy Ellison from Savanta to talk about the history of the financial services market and the failure in the market leading up to the consumer duty principle. Kathy, how were the financial services market and what risk did the FCA identify through its own market reviews to safeguard the interest of consumers?
Well, the FCA have always taken regulation for consumers seriously. And in the mid-noughties, the main FCA regulation was TCF for treating customers fairly. Now, FCA reviews found that although regulation was in place to deal with potential harm, customers could suffer harm in a different number of ways, mainly by lack of understanding, perhaps because firms were not so clear and transparent as they could be, or by being subjected to what we would call behavioural bias in marketing, where they were trying to nudge consumers towards their specific commercial interests, in other words, to buy products. Now, this potential harm is especially more likely for consumers in vulnerable circumstances. We talk about vulnerable customers quite a lot in this industry, of course. The FCA have defined vulnerability in four categories. These, I'm sure your listeners will know, are life events, such as bereavement or loss of job or divorce, particularly relevant in the debt industry, of course. The second one is resilience, ability to withstand financial shocks, perhaps not having savings in place, again, extremely relevant. The third one is capability, perhaps low literacy, language barriers, poor digital skills or financial confidence. And finally, health, perhaps illnesses or long-term disabilities. And this duty requires financial services firms to just put their customers' needs first, to deliver good outcomes. And underlying this are three aspects. One, they are being asked to act in good faith. Two, they're being asked to avoid causing foreseeable harm. And three, they're being asked to enable and support all their customers to pursue their own financial objectives.
Now we see that there is a shift toward customer emphasis or customer outcome. But what does that mean for a layperson? How does that need to be demonstrated at an organizational and or operational level?
Well, customer outcomes really means what it is that the consumer or the customer is doing. Now, the FCA wants to see outcomes in four areas. The areas where a customer and a financial provider interact, their relationship. These are the products and services they buy, the price or the value that they think they're getting, the understanding that they have of the products and services that they're buying, and the support they get along that journey. And organizations are being asked to demonstrate that customers believe that they're getting good outcomes. And a good outcome might be that they've got a fair price, that they're treated well, that they have confidence that they're buying the right thing, and that they can access the services well.
Savanta is a research and consultancy firm. So, have you carried out any research on this precise issue? If you have, what have you noticed in the market?
Yes, indeed. So Savanta have done a huge amount of research for a number of financial clients, as we are a market research consultancy. So there are these four pillars, as we described them before, that the FCA have: this products and services, price and value, consumer understanding, and customer support. And research has been done under all four pillars. Two of these pillars, products and services and customer support, have been measured and tracked for many years. Think about customer satisfaction surveys. Service delivery is generally very good, but of course, there are pockets of poor quality, usually perhaps speed or communication, keeping customers informed and updated. However, since Duty was launched over the last 18 months, the focus has been very much on the other two pillars. So the first one is about customer understanding. They need to demonstrate that customers understand all the communications that they receive from them and to provide a fix if there's any uncertainty or ambiguity in the messaging. If you think about it, do people really understand terms and conditions, for example? And so we've been helping all our financial services clients in a number of large testing programs. Now, this testing covers lots of different communications, printed materials such as letters or statements, T's and C's, sales brochures, leaflets, the list is endless. But also things like conversations in branches or phone scripts, websites, texts, everything, in fact, that they communicate with their customers. And this is a huge amount if you think about it. And research must provide clear, concise, actionable evidence that customers genuinely understand and genuinely comprehend what all this communication is trying to tell them. And so we've developed a research program to be able to do this. And you asked me what we found. Well, we found a few things. First of all, we found that about one in three consumers feel that the communications they receive is very easy to understand. But three in four felt that the next steps were clear. So there is some work to be done. And when we tested materials from a large number of clients, we found that these communication documents varied widely. Some definitely failed. They really were not understood and needed major rework. Others just needed small tweaks. And we found, as I said earlier, that the more vulnerable the customers are, those that struggle, particularly in things like low literacy or language barriers, or were particularly financially unconfident, they were more and more likely to not understand what they were being told. Remember, finance is incredibly complex. And we've been able to guide clients through these changes and continue to do so on an ongoing basis. And the final pillar that we've focused on is being fair value. Now, this is a little bit harder to do, but we found that one in three consumers believe that they are offered really fair value, considering interest rates or fees or charges. So that leaves quite a lot to go for. And we do feel that there is a lot to do more on offering fair value. And we are undertaking a number of research programs with a number of clients. And I'm sure my other colleagues here on the on this podcast will be explaining that a little bit more later.
From your understanding, what were the major challenges faced by many financial firms to implement such a principle into their working practice?
Well, the first challenge they've got is, although the FCA said they were being very clear, there has been a huge amount of confusion around exactly what's expected by these firms before that initial July 2023 deadline for Consumer Duty. No real clear guidelines were given by the FCA, so it was a little ambiguous, but this has been often the case of the regulation in the past. So there has been a bit of a sort of suck it and see mentality, especially over these communication changes. But things are becoming clearer. And the FCA are beginning to explain in more detail exactly what they want. And so we're able to help customers and get a better deal. But the main challenge that that companies have had is in just changing this huge number of customer communications to ensure they're understood. This is a massive undertaking. They have hundreds, if not thousands, of comms going out. And remember, this testing would need to be a regular ongoing exercise, as the FCA imply that previous tests may not be proof enough. The other challenge they've got is it's not just communications, of course. Changes have got to be made to all aspects of their business, their processes, their IT systems, their databases, their staff training, and the fundamental governance of the company, the ongoing advice offering, and the way senior managers are judged and remunerated, basically everything. And this takes time and it costs a lot of money. And these companies have got to decide where to start. They're, of course, starting with the areas or life stages where harm is more likely.
So, Kathy, has there been a resistance to implementing some of the principles within the financial market?
I haven't seen any resistance at all, in fact. All the firms we've spoken to are keen to comply, not only because it's regulation, of course, and this is a very regulated industry, but also because they genuinely want to service their customers better than their competitors. And they want to help their customers meet their financial goals, whether that's saving for the long-term future, borrowing money to fulfill their dreams, or protecting themselves from risk. And of course, it's better for them too, because they're providing better products and services, and hopefully their customers are going to remain loyal.
Okay, Kathy, so where are we now with the implementation phase within the financial services market? Do bear in mind that we are still talking about debt recovery and advice.
Okay, so the FCA set out their rules and guidance for the new Consumer Duty in about mid-2022, and it came into force in July 23. At that point, all active products had to comply with the duty. And they've got more time to ensure their legacy products, products that aren't being sold now, comply. They're also ensuring that they were ongoing, continuous process. This needs to become business as usual. So that's where they are in implementation. It's ongoing. And in terms of where it fits with debt collection, well, one of the interesting things is our research has found that Gen Z, those aged under 26, are far less likely to find communications clear or understand the next steps. And vulnerable customers that I raised earlier, the same. And I think these are the sort of people that maybe are more needing debt services and more likely to be in debt. One of the biggest issues, as well, very relevant to the debt industry, is education. Now, every discussion I've ever had on Consumer Duty has ended up with all parties, providers, advisors, consumers themselves, agreeing that people should be better educated in financial matters. This includes the basics of how finance fundamentally works, the principles of interest rates, for example, especially compound interest, the impact of inflation, how to get a good credit score, that sort of thing. And by education, of course, we don't necessarily mean in schools and colleges, but we mean throughout our life. And there are a number of government and private sources whose role it is to educate.
And finally, Kathy, is there a balance between the amount of compliance an organization had to undergo and sustainability of that organization within a very competitive market?
Yes, of course there is. There's an extra requirement being put on providers to improve the outcomes for customers. And of course, this could have the wrong consequences. So one example is this is costing a huge amount of money. Although it's definitely the right thing to do, this cost has to be borne somewhere. And so maybe this isn't going in the right direction towards making products more affordable, more fair value. That's just one of my thoughts. And the second idea is that as things get tougher, then it might be that products out there might not be available for the customers that need it. Now, let me give you an example of this. The FCA are particularly getting tough on premium finance providers. And so there might be less provision of direct debit. And we know that spreading the cost of bills, such as insurance, helps make things far more affordable. So these things could be pulling in the opposite direction to what they intended.
Thank you, Kathy. We are still going to hear more about the subject, no doubt. Let me get Bob Wennington from Money Advice Liaison Group into this conversation. Bob, you've been working in the financial services market for over 30 years. You've seen a wealth of changes. You've seen how new products develop. But the question is, are we seeing new products that is beneficial for good customer outcomes What is your thought?
Thanks, Rippon. And very interesting, Cathy. There are a lot of points that you raised there that resonated with me, particularly going back in my banking career and treating customers fairly, which underpins a lot of the work that the FCA has developed since then, and obviously the consumer duty announcements made more recently. In between my banking career and working for the Money Advice Liaison Group, I spent a few years working for the Institute of Customer Service. And actually, a lot of the principles around world-class customer service, and there was a model developed by the Institute, focused on strategy and culture, people and processes. And you almost worded it in the same way, Cathy, when you spoke, that those are the principles of delivering outstanding customer service. And returning back to the question you've just raised, Rippon, the majority of organisations that work in this sector are determined to deliver world-class customer service in everything that they do. From what I've seen, not just in the last 18 months or so since the build-up and the launch of Consumer Duty, but even prior to that, that the organisations, whether they be creditors or people in the debt advice sector, really do put their customers right at the heart of everything that they're doing. And that, for me, is the whole essence of Consumer Duty. It is putting the customer right at the heart of it. It's developing the products, developing the services to make sure that they meet and fulfill the pillars that Cathy outlined, but also they look to be the best that they can be in what is a very competitive market. They're not going to develop their businesses and develop their customer satisfaction levels if they don't fulfill this requirement to deliver outstanding service, to deliver the requirements of Consumer Duty, and to be the best that they can be for their customer.
I must say, Bob, you are in a privileged position to be in, to hear from debt collection, recovery and advice. What discussion have these sectors been having within your membership, and what are they saying about this issue?
Subjects of customer duty has been right at the forefront of a lot of organisational strategic thinking over the last couple of years in the build-up to the launch last July. And it has been a topic that we have featured. We have national meetings, we have regional meetings, and we also have an annual conference. And the FCA have spoken at those meetings. They've brought the principles and the plans for Consumer Duty to the table. And we trigger a lot of discussion and debate amongst our members. And on the subject of Consumer Duty, we've seen really strong engagement. A lot of people who are very keen to share good practice. They've not been afraid to actually come to the table and say, we don't perhaps understand one element or another. And other people have been equally quick to come back and say, well, we're doing this or we're doing that. I don't see the organisations seeing this as a point of competition to see who can do and fulfil the consumer duty requirements better than anybody else. I think everybody has a collective aim and objective to make sure that they fulfil the requirements and they deliver the best service that they can deliver and to be compliant and within the regulations that have been set by the FCA. And what I've found really through conversations is that arguably the larger firms, the larger organisations, the bigger debt advice agencies have invested an enormous amount of time and resource and commitment to meet the regulations, to build on the foundations that they had with treating customers fairly, to build on their customer service strategies, and to ensure that they really do change their processes, change their approach to dealing with customers, particularly the type of customers that you highlighted, Cathy, in terms of the vulnerable and people who are struggling with different requirements in terms of the need for their support. And it's the smaller firms who probably are struggling more because they don't have the resource. They probably don't have a compliance department to help them and support them develop the good practices that they need to develop. And I think from conversations that I've had with the FCA as well, it's probably those smaller firms that the FCA will be looking at a little closer as things start to develop.
Well, I get it. I get it that debt collection and debt advice, both of these businesses are regulated by the FCA. But what specifically the debt advice sector has been doing to address this issue?
I think in many ways there are very strong similarities in terms of the approach. Obviously, the nature of debt advice compared with the creditor community is different, and so the approach will be structured in a different way. But I know one of the topics that Cathy mentioned was around price and value. I think it's been a lot of focus on price and value, and I'm aware of a piece of research undertaken by Royal London. As a review of advisors' fee structures, and 37% of advisory organisations have changed their fee structures directly as a result of Consumer Duty and the need to fulfil the obligations that they have under Consumer Duty. So there are certainly some changes that are going on that are making the customer, the client, very much at the heart of what the organisations are doing.
Money Advice Liaison Group had written a vulnerability guidance in the past with Money Advice Trust, another debt advice charity. To what extent that guidance is different from Consumer Duty?
I don't think it really is different. It picks up one of the elements that Cathy spoke about in terms of the outcomes. It's important that there is recognition that there are vulnerable customers, and different types of groups of people require some slightly different approaches and different attention. But I do think that the vulnerability guidance that we have produced in the past is very much complementary to this. And the FCA, I know, are doing a separate review of vulnerability guidance generally, and I think that's going to be quite interesting. That's coming out later in the year. But turning to the nature of the different approaches, we have an annual conference, which I mentioned earlier, and our conference last year focused on the new demographics of debt, and very much looking at different groups. Vulnerable customers, people within Generation Z, which again Cathy mentioned earlier, but also other groups such as elderly customers, and the impact of those different groups in terms of debt. And we also have the FCA talking about Consumer Duty at that conference, and very much emphasizing a lot of the points that were brought out earlier in this podcast, that I think everybody needs to be aware of and everybody needs to build into their strategic planning moving forward.
Inevitably, Bob, there is a tension between making profits and bureaucracy. What is your take on fairness for customers and businesses and their profitability?
I think it really comes down to the focus on the customer, the client, the person for whom the organization is looking to support. And again, I draw back to that world-class customer service model I mentioned earlier, where to be truly world-class, it's about delivering outstanding performance in terms of the strategy and the culture of the organization, the people within it, and the training and the performance of those individuals, and also the processes. So, in terms of bureaucracy, it has to cut through those bureaucratic levels to make sure that the customer remains absolutely at the heart of what the organization is doing. Yes, they need to make profits, and it's important that organizations make profits, but not at the expense of the customer. And I think that's something that Cathy flagged earlier, which is a real concern, that the products may not be fair value and affordable if the costs of making the changes to improve them in line with the requirements of Consumer Duty become overwhelmingly too expensive to develop. And that's an area that I think time will determine whether that is an issue or not.
Thank you, Bob. Let me get Alex Pitcher from Step Change to speak about it from an organization's perspective, which directly delivers debt advice. He's also in charge of regulatory aspect of advice. Alex, if I take you back to pre-consumer duty period, what was it like running a debt advice charity, and what has changed upon implementing consumer duty?
Yeah, thank you for having me on. And yeah, for Step Change, I think culturally, we've always wanted to do the right thing for clients. So, you know, on the one hand, we could say, well, you know, this is what we've always done. Our vision is to create this society that's free from problem debt. So in one sense, it may not have significantly changed our culture or our determination to help people in debt get back on their feet. But what consumer duty has really done is made us focus on fully and more explicitly articulating what is our position within our organization on what the right thing to do actually is. You know, we are dealing with clients in lots of complicated circumstances. So it's helped us to focus our minds there. And it's also sharpened our focus on how we prioritize, how we report, you know, what we report on, the governance that we have, the assurance that we seek to ensure that we are, in fact, consistently delivering good outcomes for every client seeking our help. And the other reflection for me is, on balance, it's really helped us bring our first and second line functions closer together and be more united around a consistent definition of what a good outcome or a risk of harm would mean in the context of what Step Change does as a provider of debt advice and debt solutions.
FCA undertook several market reviews of the debt advice market. Initially, it was about how consumers were harmed by profit-making companies. Now, recently, we had a major issue around individual voluntary arrangement. This is a clear example. But what challenges non-profit-making charities were facing in this sector?
So this gave us a big conundrum in terms of how we interpreted consumer duty. And it's really easy to go to almost the two extremes of, is consumer duty huge for us in that it's absolutely everything we do, because, you know, we're all about helping our clients? Or is there almost nothing to do here because this is just what we do anyway and there's almost no change to make? But once we've got into it, of course, you know, the reality is it lies somewhere in the middle. And in interpreting the duty, there's been some really interesting challenges. So, you know, for example, as we think through price and value that was mentioned earlier in the conversation, why does price and value mean in the context of a charity providing free services? But it's made us think, you know, principally about that value part of this. You know, what is the value of the debt advice that our clients receive? Is that time that clients have to invest in going through debt advice worthwhile to them? Are they getting good advice at the end of it? Are they getting advice that they can do something with that justifies the time going through all of their debts, all of their budgets, you know, their income expenditure? So we've really had to think and interpret what consumer duty means in our world. And I think the challenge, or one of the big challenges, is not so much about setting out to try and do the right things to meet the requirements of the consumer duty, but I think there's more of an emphasis now on all types of firm to be able to demonstrate an evidence that we've been doing the right things. It's really focused our mind on whether we do have the hard facts to be sure that, you know, that we aren't producing poor outcomes or there aren't issues in our journey, and making sure we look across the full spectrum of products and channels as well, whether a client is coming to us to speak on the telephone or whether they're doing their debt advice online. And we've needed to do some filtering here in the information that we have, because like many organizations, we've got an enormous amount of data and reports, but we have to give serious thought to distilling it down and making sure that we've got really pertinent information that could highlight whether there are issues there. If I think about vulnerable clients, we've put a lot of effort into monitoring each stage of the client journey and looking at the percentage of clients both declaring vulnerabilities and those who don't have vulnerabilities, to make sure that you're seeing about the same proportion proceeding. So, you know, are we seeing a smaller percentage of clients finishing debt advice or a smaller percentage of clients selecting a debt solution? And these are the things that need to be the real warning flags for any organization to go, we might have a problem there. There might be a subset of clients who are not receiving the same level of service, or there might be some barriers there that are preventing them from proceeding through the journey. But the final thing I would say on this is part of being a charity. I mean, any organization has some finite limit on funding, but I think that is even more acute for a charity. Not only do charities have a constrained budget envelope to work within, but we also need to be absolutely laser focused on fulfilling our charitable purpose. And what that means for us is every pound that we spend unnecessarily is a pound that could be going towards the provision of debt advice and debt solutions that clients really need. So we have to make sure that in our interpretation and application of the consumer duty and, you know, many other things, that we are as efficient and effective as possible.
Speaking of efficiency, Alex, there is no doubt a conflict, isn't there, in one where you have to deliver good service, but at the same time, debt charities such as Step Change is going through a financial upheaval because funding stream is getting thinner and thinner and thinner. So how do you balance that in that context while at the same time meeting the best outcome for the customer?
Anybody in this sector or around this sector would tell you that this is immensely challenging. The demand is going up and, you know, funding is very limited. What we've really tried to focus on at Step Change, though, is articulating the value exchange. And what I mean by that is the benefit to society of the work that we're doing. So we have tried to be very clear and provide, you know, data and insights to support the position that the benefit of the work that we do. And this is a case that we do make to funders, and we've been far more open about this in being transparent around our funding, being clear about what that funding does cover, what it doesn't cover, and we've been open about the benefits that we bring. So, you know, we do a lot of analysis and research to demonstrate this. And so in some regards, though, we are trying to embrace this and make the best of it as more of an opportunity than a challenge, you know, particularly in the context of consumer duty. So, you know, we stand behind the great work that we do, and we're able to evidence that we do the right thing. And under consumer duty, it's easier to demonstrate that our advice and our outcomes are not potentially compromised by the need to make a profit. That helps being a charity, that we can say that we are less conflicted than some, and it's easier to evidence it. And we provide that assurance to our funders that we are a trustworthy partner to work with. And we shouldn't forget that, you know, many of our funders are also within the scope of the consumer duty. So they have to meet the same obligations that we're talking about today. And we make sure that we want to reassure them that when they refer one of their customers to us, they can feel safe doing that and they will get really good care. So there's definitely that connection of we're dealing with the same person, you know, albeit from different sides. And there is more dialogue to be confident that we're all doing the right thing, where there are handoffs. You know, the consumer duty does place more of an obligation that someone doesn't just refer out a customer, pass them on, and then forget about them. We're seeing at Step Change far more questions coming from the lenders that may refer clients to us, showing genuine concern and interest in what happens to the outcome of that person. Like, are they getting the help that they needed? So, I mean, it could be perceived that, you know, the funders call the shots, but in reality, they're just as bound to the requirements of consumer duty as we are. And it really gives us common purpose in the sector to make sure that their customer is looked after.
And in terms of, let's say, on an advisor level, what do they need to focus on when dealing with clients when it comes to getting the best for the customer?
I think what I love is that anyone working in this sector, you know, particularly working for a charity like ours as a debt advisor, has immense passion for wanting to help people, and that there is that real drive to want to do the right thing and help people with their problems. And consumer duty has helped crystallize some of the thinking for a debt advisor, but not necessarily revolutionized it. You know, the desire to help has always been there, and in some ways it makes our sector a little bit simpler under consumer duty than perhaps some other parts of financial service, because our purpose is so clear. But consumer duty has definitely been more in depth than TCF has been in the past. I know, you know, we mentioned it earlier. So it means an advisor can be clearer about what a good outcome is. And I mentioned earlier that we've put a lot of effort into making clear what a good outcome would look like, what contributes towards delivering that good outcome, what a risk of harm would look like. So part of this has been a program of making sure that we help give continued guidance to our advisors so that we get that consistency of outcome for a client calling in, to make sure whoever they speak to, they will be getting the same standard of service and the same outcome that they would expect from us.
On the whole, Alex, since implementation of consumer duty, what has been the learning curve?
It really has been a learning curve for us at Step Change. The thing that I've really taken away is that our approach has had to be proportionate. I think, as I said earlier, it's easy to go to one extreme or another, to say, oh my goodness, any small failing or any small inadequacy in our process, it could be a risk of harm. Or you go completely the other way and say, no, we're here to do good, so that must mean we don't need to pay attention to this consumer duty thing, like we're already doing it. And I think it's easy to get tied in knots or around what needs to be improved versus what could be a risk of harm. I think one of the lessons that we've learned going through this process, because we've identified many things that could be better in our client journey, some of those things are just improvements. You know, we could on our online journey, you know, we could get through some screens slightly quicker, or you could do something in two clicks rather than four clicks. That doesn't necessarily mean it's causing harm. But where there are issues, we've really made sure that they have to be adequately prioritized, particularly when it requires us to make significant change in the organization. So in order to balance that, and as I said, to be proportionate and not go to extremes and use the funding that we do receive wisely, we've really had to reflect that just because something could be better doesn't necessarily mean it's not good enough. We've had to really do the analysis and be clear on what's an improvement opportunity versus what is something that is a genuine risk of harm that needs to be addressed and fixed quite quickly.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you. For those who are listening to Debt Talk podcast and want to share your experience or want to hear a subject of your choice, you can get in touch with me, ripon.ray@yourdoctordebt.com or former Twitter, yourdoctordebt. I will now go back to my panelists for them to provide top tips to organizations who are struggling with meeting regulatory needs within the context of consumer duty. Let me go back to Kathy from Savannah.
Well, I think my main tip is to not think of it as a one-off exercise that we are pushing in 2023, but to think of it as a new way of working going forward. As both Alex and Bob have talked about today, obviously putting the customer at the heart of everything we do, which we should be doing anyway in financial services, but to have a continuous monitoring of all the pillars, particularly fair value and consumer understanding, and making sure that it's embedded throughout the entire organisation, that it's the ideas are not just embedded within marketing, communications, underwriting maybe, but it's right from top to bottom, from the people that deal with the consumer on the phone or in the branches, to the CEO and the whole board. So it's not a done it, tick off the list. It's not a tick box exercise. It is genuinely bringing it into the heart of the company's governance and keeping it alive.
And finally, Alex from Step Change.
I think for any organization that's either late to the party with this or has just is finding it difficult, the key steps that I've learned that have really helped us out through this process at Step Change is explicitly articulating what a good outcome looks like in the context of the products and services that you provide. Also being equally explicit about what constitutes harm and being quite clear about what that would be and identifying it. So for us at Step Change, we're thinking in terms of, harm would be if the client has to repay more than is necessary, if the client ends up staying in debt longer than they should have done, if there are unreasonable barriers to accessing our services, or if there isn't sufficient support available for vulnerable clients. Also, the tip I would give is just put client outcomes absolutely front and center in how you manage your organization. And finally, be proportionate to make sure that this doesn't become all-consuming. What Kathy said, I think, is really true about this being an ongoing exercise. And so I think any organization has to pace themselves, particularly if all of this feels overwhelming, but equally prioritize well, so that if there are significant risks of harm, put those to the front of the list and deal with them first.
Thank you very much. I'm very grateful to my panel members for giving their precious time on a very pressing subject, consumer duty and the debt sector. Debt Talk podcast would not have been successful without their precious time and also valuable knowledge. My next podcast is going to be as pressing as the current one, poverty and ethnic premium. And on that note, thank you for listening to Debt Talk Podcast with me as your host, Rippon Ray.